are tuned in to Mid-Morning Empowerment here on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Indeed, this is the Mid-Morning Empowerment on your favorite Christian radio station, Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media. Now, this being a Friday, we have our mental health chat at this time, and we're going to be speaking about resources and support for families. And this is our final installment under the subject of psychosis. And so joining us once again, we have Hanlie van der Westhuizen from the Vista Clinic. Hanlie, good morning. Welcome back to the program.
Good morning, Bongi. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Thank you so much for joining us once again. Our last session together.
Yes, our last session.
Oh, man.
It was you, and I really hope that the listeners got some wisdom and practical advice out of our talks.
Absolutely, absolutely. I certainly did. And so let's get on with the resources and support for families before we close the series. Now, when psychosis knocks, families often feel like they're standing in the dark, but help exists. And today we spotlight the resources that offer light, direction, and hope. So Hanlie, what support organizations or hotlines are available for families? Hello, Hanlie.
And we tend, as health practitioners, we tend to focus on the patient first and foremost,
yes.
and sometimes the family becomes secondary. And as we go on with our discussion, I will demonstrate the importance of making the family part and parcel of your treatment plan. So there's some contact and specific contacts and resources in South Africa available who can support family members of individuals with psychosis. And once again, the first and foremost group I'm going to mention is SADAC, the South African Depression and Anxiety Group. That is a group that I've highlighted throughout our discussion this month as a very strong and active group that promotes mental health, and maybe not specifically psychosis, but definitely well-trained and informed and educated enough to help people with resources, referrals, and crisis management when they are the first line of contact.
Mm, mm. All right. And go ahead. It's fine.
The South African Schizophrenia and Psychosis Support Group, while there isn't always a centralized national group solely for schizophrenia, right, SADOC often facilitates and connects families to local support groups. So the major tip that I can give here for families is contact SADOC directly for assistance, mm-hmm, in finding local or online support groups specifically to psychosis or schizophrenia. There is the South African Federation for Mental Health, a national body that advocates for mental health, and they can also provide resources and referral. Then, very important, and a referral line that I often use practically in my practice is the local hospitals and the mental health clinics. Mm. Many public hospitals have psychiatric units that offer family support and psychoeducation. Some notable hospitals include Chris Hani Baragwanath Hospital in Johannesburg, Groote Schuur Hospital in Cape Town, and especially the Groote Schuur Hospital Psychiatry Department. And then Charlotte Machete, Johannesburg Academic Hospital. Mm-hmm. And then also of note, all the big universities in South Africa, UCT, WITS, University of Pretoria, Stellenbosch University, all the big universities of South Africa,
yes,
usually have mental health clinics. And they've got interns and students and volunteers on a volunteer basis, giving public health services. And you usually get very good and very updated care, mm, in the local hospitals and the mental health clinics. So that is also something that listeners can investigate. Mm. They are community-based support. I won't be able to give you insight onto your local community support. But it is always, SADAC again can give information and referral on some services that are more available in your direct geographical area.
Right, right. And what about online support groups?
While dedicated hotlines specifically for caregivers are limited, the combination of, again, SADC support services, local support groups and psychoeducation programs and online communities provide a robust network of support. So I must be honest in this regard that I don't think in South Africa we are as advanced to focus on care for the caregivers and the families of individuals who's been diagnosed with psychosis. But they are ad hoc care in our current resources.
And how can families find culturally appropriate mental health services? You know, and I'm thinking about a country like South Africa, or even just on the continent of Africa. There's so much diversity. Are there any health services, mental health services, that can be, you know, culturally diverse and culturally appropriate?
Yeah, I think sourcing culturally sensitive professional care is a very important step in ensuring that mental health treatment respects and incorporates a person's cultural background, language, traditional beliefs. A few practical steps that I can recommend is research and identify culturally competent providers. Ask for recommendations. Mm-hmm. Reach out to community leaders, traditional healers, religious leaders, and trusted elders who may know mental health professionals' experience in cultural sensitivities. I think check professional directories, look for mental health practitioners who specify cultural competence, especially people who've got multilingual abilities, you know, or experience working with specific cultural groups. You can contact professional associations, you know, South African Society of Psychiatrists, SISA, the South African Psychological Society. There are a lot of professional associations which one can contact. On the issue of, you know, obviously one would prefer to speak to a professional who comes from your same cultural background, speak your own language. I mean, that is a wonderful scenario where you find a professional that comes from your community and knows your traditional and cultural background, which is sometimes extremely hard to find. And also, you know, people find themselves in crisis not geographically close to their area, especially here in Gauteng, Johannesburg, Pretoria. There are a lot of people from the Eastern Cape of KwaZulu-Natal, you know, working here, and they find themselves geographically removed from the area of origin. And I think here a key feature for me is professional humbleness. Maybe your practitioner cannot speak your language. Maybe your practitioner is not as you know, culturally aware of specifics of your traditions. But if your professional is humble and they are willing to listen to you and they are willing to have a person-centered approach to your condition, then I think it's something that one can work with. Yeah. I think this person should also be willing to engage with your community and your traditional healers. Very, very often we feel that a collaborative approach to aim for a care team that respects and integrates cultural practices or the approach that works. So, and I think people should also be aware of their rights. Clarify your cultural needs when you contact providers. You know, when reaching out, ask providers if they are familiar with your cultural beliefs, practices, or language. And if they are not, ask whether they know and patient. I think community-based organizations are a valuable source to you know, refer people. And I think also patients should advocate for cultural sensitivity. You know, be proactive, communicate your needs, and ask for a provider who's open to integrate and who will respect your cultural perspectives.
Okay. And what educational tools can help families to better understand psychosis?
I think educational tools are essential for empowering families to understand psychosis, to reduce stigma, to support their loved ones effectively. I think there are many, many, many organizations who provide psychoeducational booklets and brochures. You know, those are easy access, and they usually produce very user-friendly printed material, you know, on what psychosis is, what the symptoms and the signs are, causes, risk factors, etc. And these are often available free or low cost at clinics or hospitals or online. Then there's our educational websites and online resources. Again, the SADOC website is mindorganization.za, which is the initiative of the National Institute of Mental Health, and healthtalk.org, or also about personal stories and videos explaining mental health conditions. There are a number of videos and documentaries. For me, I still prefer platforms like YouTube, mm-hmm. who have many reputable videos. And I think for people who are looking for videos, look for those who come from recognized mental health organizations. If a mental health organization are willing to endorse a certain video, usually you can trust that the content of that videos. So there are a number of them. And then there's also the mobile apps and the digital tools, the mood tracking apps and the psychoeducation apps, example, MindLight, Mood Tools. I've mentioned a number of these in our previous discussion. And some of these apps are designed specifically for family members to learn about psychosis now to support their loved ones. Books for families, examples here, Living with Schizophrenia by E.L. Morrison, Understanding Psychosis from various mental health organizations. The Family Guide to Mental Health by SADAC is also a good guide to help.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And Hanley, why is it important for families to seek support for themselves too? Why does this need to, you know, why does the support need to extend to the family members as well and not just the patient alone?
I think it's very important for families to seek help themselves when caring for a loved one with psychosis. Mm-hmm. And here's why. It reduces caregiver stress and burnout. Caring for someone with psychosis can be emotionally, physically, and psychologically demanding. And without support, your stress, anxiety, depression can escalate, and you can even face the risk of burnout. Mm-hmm. With support, you can improve the quality of care. When families are supported and they are better equipped and they understand the illness and they can manage crisis, they are in the position to provide consistent and compassionate care. I do think that educated and supported families can help better. It also helps, you know, to prevent family conflict and improve relationships. You know, psychosis can really strain family relationships due to the misunderstandings. Mm-hmm. So constant support and counseling is important. I think also the whole issue of stigma and you know, to promote understanding is important. If families understand it, they can also fight the issue of stigma. Mm. And it also helps them to access resources and practical support. And when families seek help, they can model healthy behavior. And that is an important attitude to encourage the loved one. Mm. But I think what is important here is to mention that caregiver burnout in families caring for someone with psychosis has a unique characteristic and unique challenges compared to general caregiver fatigue. I think the emotional exhaustion and compassion fatigue are actually much higher in caring for someone with psychosis. And the reason for this is it is an intense emotional strain. There's a constant worry about the loved one's safety, the unpredictable behaviors, the fear of relapse. You know, those are real in caring for someone with psychosis. Mm-hmm. There's a really, really high risk for compassion fatigue because over time, caregivers may feel emotionally drained for providing this continual support. There's also unique feelings of guilt and shame because many caregivers experience guilt related to the perceived inadequacies in their care for this person that they love. And they may blame themselves if the loved one's condition, you know, gets worse. So these are also very important. There's also very often feelings of frustration and helplessness. You know, dealing with symptoms like hallucinations, delusions, or disorganized behavior can be exhausting. And it is it is really important to note that this is very different from caregiving in maybe a cancer patient or a physical disability. Mm. With that, there's far more predictability. And with psychosis, the predictability element is often a huge problem. Mm-hmm. Because of the stigma, there's often social isolation in families. You know, they may feel isolated from friends, family, and community because of the stigma. Mm-hmm. And then also the time-consuming nature of the caregiving. Continuous caregiving can lead to exhaustion, sleep disturbances, and neglect of their own needs. And there's also the other aspect is that the component of anxiety and hypervigilance. They are constantly monitoring for signs of relapse or crisis, and that can cause persistent anxiety in the caregiver. They often feel on the edge, and they often fear the next crisis or episode. So that is also a real problem. Then just more practical, you know, there's financial strain associated with this illness. So the cost associated with treatment, medication, sometimes loss of income due to caregiving responsibilities. They all contribute to the stress and the burnout. Another thing that happens in family, there's role strain or loss of identity. You know, caregivers may feel a total loss of their personal identity as caregiving becomes their primary role and overshadowing all other aspects of their life before. And they can often feel overwhelmed by the responsibility, and that can really reel to emotional and psychological exhaustion. So I think it's important that we note that psychosis-specific burnout often involves the intense emotional reactions to the unpredictable and often severe symptoms like hallucinations and delusions, very much core to this illness, and compounded by societal stigma, cultural beliefs about mental illness. And then the unpredictability and the chronicity of the psychosis can make caregivers feel they are in a constant state of crisis management. I think here, another very important point, the severity, the chronicity, and the prognosis of the psychosis are fundamental factors that influence how it impacts children, spouses, and families as a whole. You know, if you've got a mild versus severe psychosis diagnosis, you know, mild symptoms or episodes that are well controlled and managed with treatment tend to have a lesser disruptive impact, where severe symptoms such as persistent hallucinations, delusions, or disorganized behavior can cause significant distress, instability, and even danger affecting all family members deeply. Mm. So, you know, the greater severity often correlates with increased emotional burden in caregiving demands and family disruption. Then also the chronicity of the condition, you know, acute episode versus a chronic illness. You know, if it's a recurrent or chronic psychosis, it means ongoing management, frequent hospitalization, and persistent symptoms, you know, and that can really lead to prolonged family stress, caregiver fatigue, and financial strain and social isolation. The prognosis, obviously good prognosis. Some individuals respond very well to treatment, they achieve remission, and they can live productive lives. Their families experience hope, relief, and better adjustment. Where poor prognosis, you know, where patients have persistent symptoms, cognitive impairments, and their functional decline is quite prominent. Mm-hmm. This leads to ongoing caregiving, social stigma, and emotional strain. So it really, you know, influences the course of how families plan for the future, their level of hope, and their coping strategies. So it is definitely a very different and very specific, you know, topic if we talk about caregiving for a psychotic individual in the family. And I think when we talk about family, you know, we are very general, but there are also specifics. You know, if we talk about a family, there's a sibling, there may be a child or a parent or spouse involved. Mm-hmm. And I think there are specific emotional experiences relating to your identity within the family. So if I can maybe just take the opportunity to refer to siblings, you know, siblings often face very unique and challenging dynamics when a brother or sister has psychosis. Mm-hmm. And these difficulties can really impact their emotional well-being, their relationships, and their family function. I think common challenging dynamics is their feelings of confusion and uncertainty. You know, if they don't understand what psychosis is, it can lead to confusion about their siblings' behavior. And obviously, the unpredictability of the symptoms can create anxiety about when episodes might occur.
Right.
And there's also the feelings of guilt and responsibility. You know, some siblings blame themselves or feel responsible for their siblings' condition. And they may have the irrational belief that they could have caused it, or the irrational belief that they can fix it. So it's important to also check for how they understand and what meaning they attach to this diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
There's also very understandable. There can be feelings of resentment and frustrations. You know, siblings may feel resentful because they perceive that the affected sibling receives more attention and resources. And it can also cause disruptions in family life. You know, for instance, hospitalizations can have a huge impact on family life. And stigma, again, huge influence on siblings. They may feel embarrassed or ashamed about their siblings' behavior. And because a child or a teenager is in this developmental phase of trying to adjust on a social level, this can really impact their developmental course in social identity. And it can cause them to withdraw from friends and to avoid social activities.
Mm-hmm.
So it can have a huge implication. And they may feel also guilty because they want normality.
Yeah.
You know, to want a normal life, I think, is very, very normal for each child or teenager, especially when their own goals are so affected by this family crisis. So they can feel guilty and feel selfish if they think along those lines of, I want a normal life. There's often role strain in the family dynamics. You know, siblings can sometimes, you know, they if they don't experience rivalry, blame, or resentment, you know, and that usually occurs when they feel that the roles are unevenly distributed. You know, they can also take on, you know, more adult roles, and that can imply loss of childhood and youth experiences. Very often you find that the siblings are more involved with caregiving responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And I think very important to take care that other siblings aren't overlooked. It obviously, huge impact if a partner develops psychosis. There's a lot of emotional strain and stress. Because it really just changes the dynamic of the couple's communication and their support networks and just the identity of the relationship rather crucially.
Mm-hmm.
There's usually communication difficulties in the couple. You know, psychosis symptoms like paranoia, delusions, or disorganized thinking can really hinder effective communication. There's also the issue of reduced intimacy. Emotional and physical intimacy may decline due to mood swings, medication side effects, or emotional withdrawal. And misunderstanding is usually at the core of a reduced satisfaction in the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a huge shift in roles. You know, the healthy partner may take on caregiving, more financial responsibilities, decision-making roles, which can really alter traditional relationship dynamics, you know. So that is a huge impact on the relationship. It can also impact trust and security. Hospitalization, relapses, frequent episodes can cause instability and insecurity about the future in some relationships. I think families usually experience that the whole identity of their social network often change. You know, people who often visited may visit less. There can be a huge change in friendship patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously the financial and practical challenges. There are increased expenses involved. The medical care, the medication, the therapy, the hospital stays are all a huge strain on finances. And sometimes there are employment issues as well. The affected partner may be unable to work consistently, leading to financial instability. So there's a huge risk on the partner for caregiver burnout and potential resentment. So, yeah, It is for this reason that I think a realistic comprehensive treatment plan mm-hmm. usually includes both the individual with a psychosis and the family. And those are really essentials for me for effective management and recovery.
Mm. Powerful. Now, with this being our last session together, I think it's important before we say goodbye to just, if it's even possible, look back over the whole month and pick out just a few of the very, the most important points that you think you want to make sure we don't miss out on, that we don't forget. What would those be?
I think the first and foremost point is early detection. Okay. The earlier that we can have somebody in a treatment plan, the better the outcomes are. Mm-hmm. We can expect far better outcomes if the person reaches treatment early when in the illness. That is the most important thing. I think the second one is we can't have a cookie cutter approach. Psychosis is still, although it is a diagnosis, it is still very unique and it affects each individual differently. So it is very important to seek treatment that caters for your individual situation, for your individual family situation, for your individual culture or traditional belief set. I think a patient-centered care program has the best chance for adequate management and long-term management. Mm-hmm. The other issue that we mentioned was consistent treatment. I think it is whatever treatment plan you choose, whatever care you choose, it's important to stay consistent. It's important to commit to that treatment plan and to do it throughout. Mm-hmm. Then good communication. I think it is important to know that you are the expert on your experience as an individual. And by communicating what you are experiencing, you are enabling the treatment plan to serve your needs better. That is very important. We need to understand, and for that, we are really, really so dependent on effective communication from the individual, from the people closest to the individual affected. Then maybe the last thing, Bongi, is we need to remain hopeful.
Yeah.
That is so important. We need to remain hopeful. And as much as we say that you know, sometimes people are lucky and there's full remission, sometimes others have partial remission. For others, it's a far more difficult road. We need to stay hopeful. And we also need to know that you know, life can sometimes deal you with a very, very difficult situation. Yeah. And that you can maybe in this situation feel that, I can't deal with it. I can't cope with it. But this situation can very often be the most beautiful thing that happened to you. It can allow you to grow in areas where you have never been able to grow. It can, you know, open aspects of your personality that would have never been crystallized. And very often people over 10 years, 11 years or so in this journey look back and they actually view this very difficult situation as the biggest gift of their lives. Wow. So my message is really stay hopeful and remember that this one of the symbols of mental health is the butterfly and that transformation is possible.
Beautiful. I love that. Well, thank you so much, Hanley, for coming through today and the whole month. It's been a blessing speaking with you and being educated about the subject. I pray that God continues to bless your ministry and your work. And thank you so much for your time. God bless you.
Thanks so much. And it was a pleasure. Take care.
You are tuned in to Mid-Morning Empowerment here on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.